Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 247. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how excited are you to be in Arizona in, what, about 36, 37 hours or so?
Very, very much so. I'm already just thinking about all the fun times we're going to have, all the games we're going to go to, and I'm pumped, dude. It's what I look forward to every year, and it comes and goes too quick, and so I don't want to wish it away, but I'm ready to be in Arizona for sure. I'm so pumped.
As am I. Did you get a new haircut recently?
I did. Yeah. Got one ready to go. Yep.
Same here. I got mine on, what day was that? Saturday afternoon. Got to get the nice fresh cut looking for Arizona.
Get
rid of all, felt like I lost like a pound off my head. It was ridiculous. All the hair on the floor. I was way overdue for a haircut. But yeah, man, this is really exciting. And thankfully, like, I was looking at the weather. Was that last year or the year before where it was just really cold in Arizona for the first like 3 days?
Last year, because we were playing golf and it was cold and rainy.
That's right. Yes.
That
first night game, and it was like, what, I think it dropped down to the upper 40s at the end of that game. You and I are sitting down. Everyone else had like left. You and I are still sitting there. Was that also like the 22-watt game?
That was 2 years ago that happened. We may have had one last year, but it's possible.
It all blends together at this point. But yeah, I remember me and you sitting down there, like, you know, first row, just like in sweatshirts. Like, I shouldn't have to. Obviously, I have my sweatshirt with me, thankfully, because, you know, I live in Maine. I wear it to the airport, but usually it should stay in my bag for the entirety of the trip, but not last year. But I looked at the weather, and it's not going to be the same temperature here in Maine as it is in Arizona like it was last year, which really annoying to me. But yeah, this is warm weather, baseball, you know, get
five AFL games to get to, you know, Fall Stars game, Home Run Derby. You bringing a glove this year?
No, I don't think so. I don't want to be that guy, but I kind of do. I don't know.
I'm on the fence. It'll probably be like the last second. I know where it is. It's in a closet. So that's probably be one of those last second things right before I leave. I'm like, God, do I grab it or not? We'll see. But yeah, I said last year I was going to, but I mean, I probably will. I probably will. Maybe just in case. In case I get out there and I'm like, oh, I wish I would have brought it. So maybe I'll leave it in the bag. Who knows? But yeah, that is coming right up here as people are listening to this on Halloween. Go trick or treating. What's your son going to be for Halloween? You got a costume picked out?
Yeah, he is Chase from Paw Patrol.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Chase is on the case.
Chase is on the case. That's right.
That must be his favorite Paw Patrol.
Oh, yeah. He is obsessed with Paw Patrol and. It varies each day whose favorite is, but it's Chase.
Dude, that is like, I got their parents gonna. I think like Bluey is like, you know, the S tier for most, you know, parents in terms of what their kids watch. But dude, Paw Patrol is right up there for me. Like that, I actually like enjoyed that show. When like my son would want it, my daughter didn't really like it, but my son loved it for a few years. His favorite was it did change too, but I think the most common one was Rubble. I think that was his favorite.
Yeah.
The dump truck, and he was all into that stuff. So. Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, my kids, I don't even know what my kids are going as. My son is some character from a show called Among Us. I'm not even sure what that is.
It's a game.
Yeah, so it looks like a mix between a Teletubby and an astronaut. Yeah. It's like the rainbow's, it's red, like fire truck red, like almost like the Red Rocket, our car from Arizona. But yeah, then my daughter is going as Annabelle from one of those horror movies or whatever. But
okay.
It'll be fun. But then right after that, get ready for Arizona. But today we are going to be talking about some players to buy or sell in Dynasty right now. We'll do hitters in this episode and then pitchers next time. A lot of names here. We figured we split it up into two shows. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter, Chris or X, whatever. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolshedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for work from each of us. We're both working through team-by-team prospect rankings. You know, Chris has got, you know, daily Arizona Fall League and Lindum recaps. And, you know, I'm working through Dynasty team reports and all this fun stuff. A lot of good stuff out there. Of course, all of our rankings as well. So go check those out. We greatly appreciate the support. Before we get into some players that, you know, we each picked here, I guess let's start with the sell high hitters. Let's get the sells out of the way, because it's kind of backwards in the sheet. But the one I wanted to start out with, just because it's very much relevant to, you know, obviously the World Series going on right now. Guy, I thought about putting as one of mine, but I wanted to just like pose it as a question. Given what Adelis Garcia has done, Chris, I mean, it's almost like kind of what Randy Arozarena did a couple years ago. Now, obviously, you know, great player, had a great year, 39 home runs, over 100 RBI. Would you, if you had him in Dynasty, would you look to sell high right now, just capitalizing on all the hype and, you know, everyone's talking about him, and obviously he's absolutely dominating. Would you look to capitalize on that right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, but, like, what's the line? Where do you sell? So, like, in an average format, I have Suarez. Adelis Garcia is looking at Suarez on the sheet. I have Garcia ranked 45th in average, and I have him 53rd in OEP as he drops down a little bit there. So what's the cash out? Like, what point do you sell? And I think I'm comfortable saying I'd sell him if I got a top 30 asset, top 35. Like, would you rather have Adelis Garcia or Cody Bellinger?
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, I think I lean Bellinger, because I think unless my mind serves me correctly here, I think he's a couple years younger as well. Yeah, I think I would lean Bellinger there. It's close though.
Yeah, it's a 2-year age gap, so you got 30 and 28. So that's fair. I'm not sure you're getting, like, I don't know if you got Caminero or Langford, like, yeah, Ellie, obviously do that. I'm not sure you could, but I'd give it a run. This one is, I think, more relevant. A Rosarena or Adelis Garcia?
That's tough. I think a Rosarena. I got a Rosarena like 12 spots ahead or so.
I do too. Yeah, I'm a little more comfortable with a Rosarena. So like if you got to that tier, that range of player, then I'd say I'm comfortable selling. Obviously, if you can get a top 25 asset, you do that in a heartbeat. If you're getting one of those top prospects like Holiday or Caminero or Langford or Churio, I'd probably entertain that. If it was, I don't know, I think a Rosarena is probably like the back end of what I would consider moving. So I'm all aboard selling if possible. I'll say that.
You know, a name I just thought of that I actually probably should have put as one of my buys right now. What if you could get Jordan Walker?
Yeah. I mean, I've got Walker in that right beside of Rosarena. So I would do that.
Yeah, I would too. I still got Walker probably a little bit higher than most, admittedly, but yeah, I still got Walker at this very second, 30th overall. So yeah, I think, you know, and Walker really started showing some signs of life. He wasn't ever really bad this year. Maybe a little underwhelming given all the hype coming out of spring training. But yeah, I think he started showing some really good signs down the stretch and was better. He kind of went under the radar because, you know, St. Louis was overall just not really that good this year, surprisingly. And I think what he was kind of doing the last, you know, month and a half, 2 months of the season did fly a little bit under the radar. So I would definitely look to buy low just in general on Jordan Walker. Absolutely. And yeah, if I had Adelis Garcia, I could flip him for a Jordan Walker right now, which I think is a reasonable, I think that's realistic. I think that could happen. Yeah. So yeah, I would definitely look to do that. But yeah, that's like, you know, I think we've all kind of tweeted about this in various ways, just kind of capitalizing on, you know, playoff performances like this or huge AFL performances. You know, first thing comes to mind, Jacob Marcy, you know, capitalizing on these huge performances right around this time of year. You know, people are, you know, already itching to make trades and get their teams better for next year. And you could really capitalize, you know, one way or another on, you know, kind of like the hype that's going on here. So let's get into some of our individual names we put on the sheet. We got 12 names total, starting with a name that we actually already mentioned, you know, 45 seconds ago with Cody Bellinger.
Yep. So I do think Bellinger is a decent sell, and I would move Adelis for Bellinger. So did you hear that loud and clear? I'm not completely out on Cody Bellinger by any point. I think he's done some things that prove that he's capable of sticking and being a serviceable fantasy bat, but his stock is soared, and I think you can capitalize on that personally. I think that you can get a top 25 return for Bellinger at the moment. And if you can, then I would 100% suggest that. And there's a lot of questions in the air with, you know, where does Bellinger land? Like, he's a free agent for one. Does he re-sign in Chicago? It's possible. Is that the best fit? Like, he could go a lot of places. And there, I think that the landing spot will kind of dictate some value. But I think also you can probably cash out right now and get something pretty good, considering the fact that he doesn't hit the ball hard at all. Like, it was almost as if he traded power for contact this year. Like, you look and everything kind of flipped, which is interesting. He still managed 26 home runs and 20 stolen bases. He had 307 with an 881 OPS. So really good stuff across the board, but pretty bad hard hit data, and that's really never who he's been. His 31% hard hit rate was 10th percentile among all MLB hitters. His 87.9 mile an hour average EV was 22nd percentile among all MLB hitters. And then his barrel rate, also rather low. These are all career low marks. His barrel rate of 6.1%. Even worse, if you look at it on a per plate appearance basis, of 4.7% per plate appearance. So overall, to me, I see some overperformance here. You look, and I'm not a big proponent of using like the XBA and all those numbers, but typically shows like the batted ball data was not as good, and his XBA was 270 compared to that 307 average. The X slug was 437, which was significantly lower than the 525 slug that we actually saw near, you know, 100 points lower, which is pretty wild there. Right. So I do think that factoring in these things is important. Yeah, he cut the K rate significantly. He made more contact. But at the end of the day, like, this probably is peak Bellinger value moving forward. And so ultimately, I am looking to cash out, and I'm trying to get like a top 30 asset if I can. I feel pretty good if I got that. Yeah. But I think that you still sell if it's even, you know, dropping down to like a Jordan Walker. I think, you know, that would be a decent move. The upside in Walker's high.
I think, again, yeah, that's the range, and I think that's very realistic, because I think outside of what he did this year, I think some people are still kind of like have that, you know, his MVP year in the back of their mind, at least to some degree. And like, oh, look what he did back in, what year was that? 2019, I think it was. But I think people still have that in the back of their mind. Like, oh, hey, there's that, you know, possibility for more. So, yeah, I think you could, if you find the right trade partner, absolutely could maybe get, you know, top 30, top 25 value there for sure. And I'm definitely on board with that. Like, I was looking at, I'm trying to make my own projections here. And, you know, for, see, next year, it's funny because in my top 10 first base rankings for next year, which he's in my top 10, I think he has to be. The next lowest barrel rate of anybody in my top 10 is 11.1%, tie between Vladdy and Freddie Freeman. Like, everyone else is like 11 to 16%. And then he's kind of like the outlier and right in the middle at 6.1%. So, yeah, it's kind of a, and I do have his, like, I think he'll still hit over 20, but like, I have him projected for 24 home runs next year, but in like, I don't know, 60 or so more plate appearances. Yeah, so definitely, obviously, a little bit of a step back in the power department. Still good, but yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you said there for Bellinger. I'm going to go over to Tampa Bay with Isak Paredes. This is one of the, at least for me, this is one of the more just weird profiles. Like, you look at, if you ignored, like, just don't look at the surface stats and looked at the profile, you think this guy was, you know, high average with not a lot of power. Then you look at 31 home runs hitting 250, and that's just completely backwards from what the metrics signal. And, you know, this guy has, you know, zone contact rate around 90%, you know, super low whiff rate, 18.2%, doesn't strike out much at all, 18.2% there as well. Like, this guy should be hitting higher than 250. Then at the same time, look at his quality of contact, 5.9% barrel rate, 28.5% hard hit rate. Exit velocity around 87 miles an hour. Max EV is only 107.7. That's just not good. But he mastered the art of pulling the ball. Every single one of his home runs were pulled. Like, none to center. I mean, there was a couple, I guess you can call a few of those left center, but the vast majority are like right down the line. And yeah, could he do that again? I guess. But I'm always kind of scared away a bit by these types of profiles where all it takes is pitchers adjusting to, like, they know he's going to try to pull it. They try to go off the plate a little bit more to the outside with him. So I would bet every dollar I have he doesn't hit 30 home runs again next year. Like, I think I have projected for like 19 or something like that. I have like a massive drop there in the power department. People seem to think that he's like a top 100 guy now overall. I'm not even remotely close to that. I think he's more closer to 200 than 100. And, well, I do think the average could tick up. Like I said, you know, good contact metrics. You know, doesn't chase or whiff too often. So maybe you see that average tick up to like 270 or so. But I think, you know, it's going to offset and or not offset the drop in power that I'm kind of anticipating. And he doesn't bring any speed to the table. One steal in his four seasons. So needs to kind of like be that guy that can provide impact with the bat. And I just don't see that being the case, at least not to this extent moving forward. So I will go with Isak Paredes as my first guy. Back to Chris.
Yeah, Paredes is definitely a good sell in my book. And this guy I like and may not be popular, but here's why. I'm going with Lane Thomas, outfielder from the Washington Nationals. He had a career year, 28 homers, 20 stolen bases. A lot of the production was based on plate appearances. Accumulated 682 plate appearances, which is huge. He slashed 268, 315, 468. And ultimately, like, that walk rate, not so great. Lower OBP, not ideal. So those things concern me. But here's why he's a sell. I saw him go sixth round in an NFBC draft, which is just way too high for my liking, especially from a hitter who's been great for one total year. Lane Thomas has always made a lot of zone contact. Always had a high zone contact rate. And this year, again, almost 90%. Really, really good numbers there. But I just can't get behind how high I have seen him go. So you can count on the contact. He's aggressive, though. He doesn't walk, so he's certainly going to drag you down a bit in OBP. You see, he walked at a 5.3% clip. And I just wonder if ultimately this kind of power can sustain. I mean, you look and, yeah, while he barreled the ball more than Cody Bellinger did, you know, there's some things that I just have question marks about and looking at some overperformance in the profile that I think that if you're getting top 100 value for Lane Thomas, you absolutely do it. I'd be surprised if he returned top 100 value again. And maybe he does, but maybe he just sneaks in. I don't see a 28-20 season again. I mean, honestly, we're probably looking at, yeah, I mean, he can steal you 20 bags maybe in the new environment, but I think you're looking at closer to, you know, 15 home run pop. So you go back to that, and ultimately, like, where's the value? Still a valuable player, but it's all about the potential return on investment. And I think the ROI potential is really high here with Lane Thomas, which is why I'm selling.
Yeah, I almost put Lane Thomas as well, so definitely agree there. I'm going to go opposite coast here to the Oakland Athletics with Zach Geloff. Again, another guy where you can really capitalize on the surface stats because he went 14-14 in 300 plate appearances on the nose. So you extrapolate that out to 650, you're right in the ballpark of 30-30. That's just not who he is. I mean, do I think he could be a guy that flirts with 20-20? Sure, absolutely. I think there's enough power and speed in the profile to do that. He actually had a 91st percentile sprint speed. Quality of contact was good, not great, no good. 11% barrel rate, EV right under 90 miles an hour, 41% hard hit rate. So good, no, not elite by any means, but solid there. But I'm just not I just think the average is going to be, you know, pretty low, make him a pretty volatile player. Like the contact rates this past year were just not good at all. I mean, you're looking at a, you know, zone contact rate of 74.7%. Overall contact 67.9% and a swing and strike rate of 16%. That's just not going to get it done. You know, K rate was around 28%. So I think, again, while I think he's still going to be good, like I said, I think he could flirt with 20-20. I don't think the average is going to crater too much. I still think, you know, 240 to 250 in that range, but I think people are valuing him a lot higher than that. Like, you know, when I've kind of been tweeting about certain positions and stuff, you're like, oh, where's that Geloff? Why is he not higher? So I think the perceived value on Geloff is a lot higher than it should be right now. And then you got to obviously get a factor in team context, ballpark context, both of which are not great. You know, maybe if he was in more of a hitter friendly park and a better lineup, maybe I'd be more willing to, you know, go after him in dynasty leagues. But I think there's a lot of regression coming here. I mean, we already kind of saw that after I got off that blistering hot start. He did, you know, kind of fizzle out a bit. Then he had a little bit of a resurgence. But I want to see, until he shows me that the, you know, the contact rates are going to be better than what they were, he can cut down on, you know, the swing and strike rate as well. I'm not looking to buy right now. And if I had him, I'd try to capitalize on those surface stats, that 30-30 pace, and look to sell high in dynasty leagues right now. So Zach Geloff is my number two guy.
Yeah, I think that one is pretty obvious to me too. Like, he would be a good pick for me. But so you may say, like, if it's obvious, like, then how are we going to capitalize? Well, you look and there's a lot of people interested in him. So I would definitely try my best to cash out. So this one probably is not going to be popular. And it's Nolan Jones, who I rank pretty highly. Like, I honestly like Nolan Jones. I saw Nolan Jones go 35 in an FBC draft, 35 overall.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
So from that sense, like, people are going to see that. And I'm not saying people, you know, value based off that. But in reality, like, his value is just being inflated more and more and more to where I think it's becoming a sell range. Like, I think he's a top 75 dynasty asset. Like, don't get me wrong. I like it. I have him ranked in that range. But if you can cash out and get top 50, then I'd be more than happy to do that. the end zone whiff really concerns me. The contact concerns me. Like, he got away with it some. He benefited from the fact that he played in Coors Field, obviously boosting the BABIP pretty high. But, man, the contact rates, like zone contact, 71, 72%. Not great at all. That's well below average. The overall contact rate was 14th percentile among all hitters. Struck out a 30% clip. I'm just afraid that there's not much room to grow from what we saw this year, which is why I'm looking to cash out if you can, because what is the upside here? Like, I know he went 20-20 this year in a smaller sample, but what's realistic? Like, I'm 90% confident that his value's peaked right now, which means you sell, you get that piece that helps you, and that maybe you get two good pieces. Maybe you get a really high-end piece from somebody that's enamored by this 25-year-old in Colorado who has shown, what, a 30-30 pace or something ridiculous. I mean, he played 106 games in 2020, 424 plate appearances. So, yeah, he 100% was on a 30-30 pace. So you maybe find that person that's all in on Nolan Jones and you sell him, because I am a bit concerned, to be honest, about the bottom-out potential.
Yeah, and that's why I've always been pretty up and down with back when he was a prospect coming up through the Cleveland org. You know, he was a hard one for me to rank. You know, sometimes I liked him, other times I didn't. He was just very volatile for me. We saw, like, there's times where he was way too patient. The K rate skyrocketed, but he always showed that power potential. We were like, oh, what if he taps into it more, becomes more aggressive, hunts out those pitches earlier in the counts, and he started doing that. But yeah, this, like, we've seen kind of like we've already seen the low end to a degree. So yeah, that's always kind of in the back of your mind. And he's a hard one. He's one of my potential, like, last keeper spots in my home keeper league. So I could think really long and hard about if I kind of value him enough to keep him over some other guys that I'm looking at there. But yeah, Jones is definitely an interesting one heading into 2024. I'm going to go out to San Diego. And another guy that, like, I like this guy. I think he's a solid player. You know, in real life, I would love to have him on my Red Sox, especially because we need a second baseman right now in a bad way. But I think for dynasty purposes, I think Ha-Seong Kim is, you know, a good sell right now. He's coming off a 17 homer, 38 steal season. I mean, Chris, if I told you entering 2023 that Ha-Seong Kim was going to go 17-38, what would you have said?
No way.
Yeah, no way. Like, you know, again, solid player. You know, had 11 home runs, 12 steals last year in 582 plate appearances, hit 251. You know, but 17-38, that is absolutely insane. You know, I just don't see. I mean, I think the average, you know, the slash line's pretty fair. I mean, 260, 351, 398. But I just don't see him coming close to that power-speed blend again. You know, the quality of contact metrics are just not good. Barrel rate has been right around like 4.2 to 4.5% every year of his career. Exit velos right in the 86.5-mile-an-hour range. You know, max EV, 108.5 this year. You know, 112.3 is max for his career. That was back in his rookie year. Hard hit rate was actually the lowest of his career this year at 26.7%. I just don't see it. 17 is not like a massive number by any means, but I just see him kind of more what we saw last year in that 11-ish home run range. And I don't think he's going back down to 12 steals, but, you know, maybe 20-something steals. I kind of dial it back kind of like somewhere in between the 12 and 38, like somewhere in the mid-20s. But if he's back to being like a, you know, 12 homer, 25 steal guy, that's obviously a step back. Like, this guy, like, the 17 home runs, I would, almost like I was saying with Paredes, I just don't see that maintaining, you know, more than this 1 year. And again, as much as I like Ha-Seong Kim, good all-around player, every team needs a Ha-Seong Kim, absolutely. Still only 28 years old, but I would bet a fairly large sum of money that this 2023 year we just saw from him will probably go down as his career year. I feel very confident in saying that, because I don't see him approaching 17-38 again. It's just, that's way too lofty. But let's go ahead and hit a quick break. We'll come back and get into our buy lows.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, welcome back. Already hit our six sell high hitters. Now we'll hit six buy lows. And I love this first one from Chris. And this guy, surprisingly, I forget where it was, but this guy actually finished top 15 in WAR this year in the National League. And I bet you nobody would have expected that.
Yeah, that's a major surprise. And that player is James Outman, who had a really underrated season with the Dodgers. I think, you know, he started out so hot. Everybody just seemed to want to write him off pretty quick because the season really took a turn for the worst, you know, rather quickly. And ultimately, like, I just believe this guy's going to pop off. I know he's 26. I don't care. Like, he was an older prospect, but he has all the intangibles that you want to see. And it was certainly, you look month by month at the splits, and it's just pretty incredible to see what he did. You know, he started out the year hot, like I mentioned, first month of the year, hit 292, blasted seven home runs. He did a lot of things well, and everybody was like, oh man, like, Outman's going to win Rookie of the Year. And ultimately, like, that faded pretty quick. Like, the 991 OPS was not going to sustain. And then he slumped in May, you know, 165 average and a 552 OPS. In June, that was a 224 average and a 551 OPS. And then in July, everything shot back up, and everything looked really good from July on. In July, he hit 309 with a 434 OBP, 471 slug. That's a 904 OPS there. And overall, in the second half, just really, really good performance. As you mentioned, put up really big WAR numbers. Like, I was shocked to see, like, him put these kind of numbers up. But ultimately, like, he has staying power here. Like, Outman has the potential to be a fantasy. I don't want to say he's going to be a fantasy star, but he's much more valuable in fantasy than in real life, just for the intangibles he brings to the table with that power and speed. I mean, last year ran an 11.1% barrel rate, which is really good. So while the average EV was a bit lower, it still worked out. He barreled the ball at a high clip because he hits at ideal launch angles. He had near 40% sweet spot rate, which is just seeing those ideal launch angles play out. I'm truly believing that James Outman is a great buy right now. Like, I think he's going to be a top 100 asset next year, and I don't think he's going to cost you anywhere near that. With the power, with the speed you're getting, you know, you can take a little bit of a hit with it, with the average, and be okay. And even with that poor per se year, he hit 248. I mean, with a 353 OBP. So yeah, he certainly plays up in an OBP format. But I just think James Outman's going to be a dude, and I don't think he costs you very much right now. So I would consider buying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he still kind of flies under the radar because he still doesn't have, like, the big name yet. Obviously, there's a lot of bigger names on that Dodgers roster. But yeah, he was, you know, quietly, again, he put up 23-15 season, even through the ups and downs. So maybe if he figures it all out, you know, there's more potential in the tank for sure. And he kind of showed that in the minor leagues. That's why I was, you know, I think you and I were both, you know, pretty high in him coming up through the minor leagues, especially the last couple of years when he started breaking out in the upper minors. So yeah, I like that pick a lot. I'm going to go to the NL Central here in a guy that I actually was probably one of the lower, you know, rankers on back when he was a prospect. But now I think I'm becoming one of the higher people in the industry on this guy. And let's keep Ryan Hayes from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Still only 26. It feels like he should be like 30 at this point, but still only 26 years old. Had a very interesting first 3 years of his career. You know, six home runs, nine steals his first year, and 396 plate appearances. Last year, only seven home runs, but stole 20. This year, 15-10 and 525 plate appearances. But what, there's two things that have me encouraged. Like, first off, the metrics for him have always been really, really good. You know, the K rate has never been over 22% and was a career best 19.8% this year. Yeah, he doesn't walk a whole lot. And he actually had a career low 5.3% walk rate. So that's not great, but you know, quality of contact is pretty damn good. He's been above a 45% hard hit rate every year of his career. Had a 92.2 average exit velo this past year. And the plate discipline is very good as well. Your whiff rate's kind of in the low 20% range. It does chase a little bit, but you know, 30.7% isn't overly high by any means. Zone contact's always been kind of like in that 90% range. You know, overall contact rates have been very good as well. So like, he had all the ingredients to like really break out. And I think we started to kind of see it in the last, what, a month and a half or so of the season. Pittsburgh had fallen out of it after their early season kind of rise to the top of that division. And it's Pittsburgh, so people don't really pay attention too much. But from August 8th through the end of the season, which is 45 games, 202 plate appearances, Hayes slashed .318, .356, .577, 15 doubles and 10 home runs. Started elevating the ball a bit more. It's only, you know, a quarter of a season sample size, which isn't, you know, really small, but I want to see him do this for a full season because I think there is 25 homer power in this bat, and he's shown that he's going to run at least to some degree. You know, at this point, you know, his, I mean, what do you have for steals again last year? He had, you know, 10 steals, and now isn't really what it used to be. Even 20 is not what it used to be, but if he can still give you double-digit steals, get that, you know, home run total up over 20 while giving you, you know, 270 plus average. Like, I think, you know, 270, 25, 10 is absolutely in play. You know, going to be a little bit less valuable in OBP formats because of that lower walk rate. He's kind of been chilling around a 310, 315 OBP, but the metrics are all still there. Ended the season very well. It's very encouraging to see. So hopefully he can continue that into next year, you know, continue to elevate the ball a bit more. And he had the highest launch angle of his entire career this year at 13.2 degrees. A lot of that was in that stretch I just mentioned. So I think he's finally starting to put it all together. We saw it a bit. We'll see if that can transfer over into 2024. So right now, one of my biggest buys in general and right now is Ke Bryan Hayes.
I agree. I think Hayes did a lot of things well that makes me want to invest in him. I think he's going to be a guy to buy in redraft leagues, probably a good buy in dynasty still. And yeah, there was some tangible change that I really like to see. So my next player is Josh Naylor, who, again, he's another one where, you know, we've seen the performance potential. We've seen him put together, but this past year, it was almost like he did some things well in some part of the years and in some things well in other parts. But ultimately, he put together a really good year in which he hit .308 with a .354 OBP and a .489 slug. But he only hit 17 home runs, which I find interesting. He did steal 10 bases as well. But I believe there's a little bit more in the tank here with Naylor. He does so many things well that you want to see. The average EVs are good. The barrel rates are good. He's hitting at ideal launch angles. I honestly expect more power to come from this profile. And I really don't think Naylor's being valued appropriately, considering the position, considering the kind of contact you're looking at, and what I believe is good power too, that's pretty underrated. So for me, I think Naylor, he may move around next year because Kyle Manzardo's coming. So I could see Naylor in the outfield some. First, an outfield eligibility is pretty useful. I could see him in a corner spot. He may DH some, but I really do believe he's going to be first and outfield eligible, which is pretty big. And I just really buy the bat. Like, you saw the tangible improvements with contact, and I believe that there's 25 home run pop in the bat. He's only 26. Like Hayes, it feels like Naylor's been around forever too. But putting it together a full season, I mean, he played 100. The most games he's played is 122. That was last year in 2022. And this year, 121. And if he can just put together a 145-game season, he's going to get to 25 home runs easily. The dude drove in 97 runs this year in 495 plate appearances. So the upside's certainly there. The average boost was huge. Good OBP asset. I just think Josh Naylor has another gear that we're going to see in 2024, making him a pretty good buy for me.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising like how good he was this year. Again, Cleveland's not a team that, unless your name is Jose Ramirez, or maybe like, you know, one of the young pitchers, not a lot of those guys get talked about. you know, as much as they probably should. And I think the year he had really went under the radar. And yeah, absolutely. I think the metrics point that there's more in the tank for sure. So good pick there. I'm going with the pick that I'm least sure about, but the reason why I'm going to recommend this guy is because I think the value is just so, or the price is so dirt cheap right now. He's coming off major injury, which always has the, you know, the added element of risk there. How will he bounce back? But I think there's some good metrics here, and that's Garrett Mitchell with the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, obviously, the major red flag here is the K rate, 35.6% last year. You know, obviously he's seen less than 600 pitches in his entire career, so it's a very small sample size. But this was an issue that he had in the minor leagues as well. But you know, first off, his defense, you know, is pretty solid. That's a help stay in the lineup, obviously. And you know, he's got a good arm in center field. Can play that defense. Obviously, they have Sal Frelick now, so maybe they don't need him in center field. But there's good power and speed in the profile. In 141 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 9 steals overall. So that's, you know, a pretty good. That's like, I think, like a 20-38 pace or something like that over, you know, 650 plate appearances. A barrel rate above 10% each of his 2 seasons so far. Hard hit rate right around 40% for his career, and he has a 94th percentile sprint speed. You know, obviously, again, he's going to need to cut down on the swing and miss. You know, the chase rate's not even that bad, but he whiffs just way too much, especially in the zone. And that's an issue, absolutely, which is why I was kind of hesitant. But if the price wasn't as dirt cheap as it is right now, I mean, it's like to the point where there's a lot more potential ROI here than there is risk, because you don't have to give up much to get him. If it doesn't work out, maybe he doesn't come back the same from the injury. You know, maybe he, you know, swings and misses too much and swings his way right out of the lineup. You know, you didn't give up much to get him. But, you know, if he does make some of those improvements, and you know, the potential here is a guy that can hit, you know, flirt with 20 home runs and steal 30 plus bags, like 20-30, I think is a realistic outcome here if he can make some of these changes. And again, for what it's going to cost to get him, I'm willing to take a stab on that just because it's so low cost, so low risk, given what you have to give up to get them, but that potential really high ROI. So worth a shot. So I will take a stab and try to get Garrett Mitchell this offseason.
I think that's a good one. It feels like the price is depressed enough where the chance that you lose a lot is pretty minimal. And I think that the return is also pretty high. As is, I think, this guy too, Henry Davis, who came up, he played outfield. He was okay, but Henry Davis is going back to catcher. It's been confirmed by the org that he's going to be their catcher next year, I guess split time with Indy Rodriguez. And ultimately, I think that's pretty good value. Davis did a lot of good things in the minors last year, but he really struggled when he came up in the majors. He hit .213 with a .302 OBP and a .351 slug. He did hit 7 home runs across 255 plate appearances. So, yeah, I mean, across the board, like, those aren't really ideal things that I want to invest in. But I do want to invest in Henry Davis because he's going to Driveline this offseason, which, look at the hitters that go to Driveline and then look at their performance in the next year, and that's pretty substantial. So, Davis, last year in the minors, did a lot of good things. I mean, you look, he didn't chase often. He made really good contact. He hit the ball extremely hard. He had like a 109 mile an hour ninth percentile EV, which is just absurdly good. So I am ultimately wanting to invest in Henry Davis because he's not going to cost you anything. When a prospect comes up and struggles like he did, the cost is going to be so minimal that, you know, why not? And he's going to be catcher and outfield eligible, which is very big for his value. And I think he's going to play like 140 games because they also have Indy Rodriguez, who's going to be behind the plate. So Davis is going to get that catcher eligibility back and play enough, but he's also going to play every day. And we know the value in that. So to me, I wouldn't be surprised if Davis comes out as a huge OBP asset, mashes 25 home runs next year, and just is one of the top catchers in fantasy baseball because he has that eligibility. Plus, he's going to play more in the outfield. So that's the reason that I'm investing in Henry Davis, because the cost is depleted and the potential return on investment is quite high there.
Oh, absolutely. I think the catcher to own next year and probably moving forward out of between him and Endy is going to be Davis, because I don't think, you know, Endy can play outside of the catcher, and he has, but I think Davis will play a lot in the outfield. They'll probably, what do you think? Probably roughly for catcher reps, probably pretty split, I think so. And then, and then Davis will get a lot in the outfield, but does Endy, when Davis is catching, does Endy get in the lineup? Yeah, they, you know, could put him at DH, and he's played a little bit of second, I think maybe a little bit of third as well, but does he get out there as much as Davis does on days that he's not catching? So, yeah, I think that, I like that a lot. And is there a RotoWear shirt that says, like, he went to Driveline, like kind of like a spinoff of the He Went to Jared?
If not, there needs to be.
I know. Kenny, if you're listening, like, I'm giving you an idea here. Like everyone's going to Driveline this year. Multiple, you know, I think multiple guys from Pittsburgh are there. I've seen multiple guys from the Twins, like Joe Ryan's there. Another, was it Sonny Gray? Someone else is there too. But yeah, everyone's going to Driveline. It's more and more every year. But I am going to close out the show here with another catcher in Logan Ohapi, who I think you and I both kind of fell in love with out in the fall league. A couple, was it 2 years ago when we were out there? And I think his value was like started turning up then and really turned it up last year. But this year, obviously, missed a lot of time. You know, only had 199 plate appearances, but cranked 14 home runs in those 199 plate appearances, and really good quality of contact metrics: 15.6% barrel rate, 47% hard hit rate. You know, K rate, you know, pretty, you know, decent, right around league average, 24%. And yeah, the average did dip 236 with 296 OBP, but that's just not what we saw from Ohapi in the minor leagues. We saw a guy that was, you know, solid contact rates, high OBP guy, high walk rate guy. You know, he's better than a 7% walk rate. Like, I would bet every dollar I have. I mean, I'm betting a lot of money in this episode, but I would bet every dollar I have that his walk rate this year is to be higher than 7%, probably over 10%. Like, that's just who he is. He's shown better contact rates. And you looked at these, like, this is just not him. 34% chase rate, that's not Logan Ohapi. You know, 32% whiff rate, you know, that's not Logan Ohapi either. You know, contact rates have been better. So I think, well, maybe he's not going to be 270, 280 like he was in the minor leagues, but I think 255, 260, I think you see that average kind of jump up 20, 25 points. OBP probably jumps up into the 330 plus range. So he won't be like an asset in either of those two categories, but I think the quality of contact metrics are absolutely legit. We saw good power from him in the minor leagues. I think over a course of a full season, this is a potential 30 homer bat. And if he's 260 and 30, which I think he absolutely could be next year, that's like a top five player at the position. And like, this is a case where, you know, if I had a guy like Francisco Alvarez, I think I'd like Ohapi just as much or more than Alvarez. But I think the perceived value of the two is way further apart than it actually should be. I think, yeah, if you want to give the power edge to Alvarez, sure. But I give the just a pure hitting ability edge to Logan Ohapi. So I think they're going to be pretty close long term. But again, you look at rankings, and I don't think they're pretty close in any rankings, whether it's redraft or dynasty. So I will absolutely be trying to get all these shares of Ohapi I can. I mean, everyone's, you know, all going gaga over Gabriel Moreno right now, as they should. But I think, well, everyone's trying to go after him in dynasty leagues. I'd be trying to swoop in and get Logan Ohapi while his value is might be the lowest it's going to be for the foreseeable future. I think he's going to have a really good year next year and establish himself as an annual top 10, maybe even top 5 catcher at this position. So ended up with Logan Ohapi. Give you a dozen names here, 6 buys, 6 sells. Hopefully this helps you out as you kind of, we kind of get further into the offseason here. Again, we'll be doing the pitcher version of this episode next week, but we are done for today. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, and we'll see you again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.